ways. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, the Democrats more than likely aren't going to take over the House. We talked about this a little bit last week. And so this divide is going to continue. Not a whole lot is going to get done, especially when it looks for all the world like the Republicans are going to take the House. Where can they find some common ground, both sides, to be able to address what you constantly talk about what's has to be addressed in this nation? And immediately, the nation can't keep moving in the direction that it's moving in, being as divided as it is. Where is there going to be some common ground between the Democrats and the Republicans, and who can make that happen?
Well, I guess my belief is that if the Democrats opened their eyes and began to think wisely, that they'd be the best position to do so, because one of the big problems they have is this rural-urban divide, and the fact that every place but the cities is red, which has caused gerrymandering to be a very simple process, and sometimes it's not even gerrymandering, it's just the result of the dense population of the density of the population of Democrats in cities and the more spread out population of Republicans throughout the rest of the country. And I think that has to do with the failure of the Democrats to embrace issues on a broad socioeconomic basis, and rather to play a politics that, as Hillary Clinton called it, was a patchwork quilt of colors. And I think that if the Democrats more effectively embrace the problems that middle class and below middle class families in America experience, and that's really the category that almost all of rural America fits into. And if those issues were basically, you know, health care and universal child daycare and universal health care and education, that taking care of those issues would take care of the issues of so many people across the country, that it would start breaking down these barriers and the polarity. And furthermore, you know, the issue of racism translates into problems for the victimized that basically relate to health care, child daycare, and education. And so if those problems were solved, at least some of the fallout problems that relate to tribalism would break down. And I think, quite frankly, that would lead to a breakdown in the tribalism as well. You know, this rampant tribalism that's building up in America could begin to move the other way.
So, Sandy, what would you say to those who say, well, Joe Biden and the Build Back Better plan was doing just that? If you look at the components of the Build Back Better plan, that's kind of what it was at the root of it.
It was embedded in it, and they didn't spend a lot of time on the campaign trail or in the process of developing public awareness
and building
public backing for instance the child daycare component of it.
Which was
furthermore, it didn't. But it was in there, but it was in there as a tax credit, rather than to build out the program and to basically build out a system that might be premised, for instance, on local school districts, so that you could be certain the money spent would be spent on child daycare. One of the problems with tax credits is you're basically giving money to people for a purpose, but you aren't assuring that the money is spent for that purpose.
Let's go to the phone lines and CJ. Hey, good morning, CJ.
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks again for taking my call. I would like to speak about the previous guests you had.
Go ahead.
Quickly, because as we saw with Russia building up on the border of Ukraine, and Putin saw weakness in this president. Mark my word, the fact that this president goes to China and claims that global warming is our number one threat by China, you watch. Taiwan is going to be invaded.
So what is our number one threat? So, CJ, what is our number one threat from China?
Our number one threat is
we watch them
steal our intelligence, steal our technology, and this president is weak. That's our number one threat. Our own president is weak. They're building hundreds of coal plants, and this president sees global warming as the number one threat. Remember, he promised that the sanction would deter Putin from invading Ukraine. Didn't happen, did it? Didn't happen. This president is weak. The world sees him as weak. And you watch. We will have to defend Taiwan, but this president is too weak.
Well, you know, CJ, you say that. But that's nothing more than your opinion.
I told you that about Russia, Earl.
CJ.
And you told me I was wrong on Russia.
CJ. So we're supposed to believe, based on some feeling that you have, that...
It's not a feeling, Earl.
What else is it then?
We watch this president. He is so weak.
So, CJ.
He doesn't...
CJ, what is he supposed to be, a tyrant? Is that what we want as a president?
He's supposed to look Xi in the eye and say, if you even consider threatening Taiwan like he has been, flying hundreds of military, flying
that we would do what? That we would do what, CJ? That we would do what?
They don't believe him, Earl. This, you know.
Hey, CJ, the point is, you and others with the bravado, is not your life, and to send Americans and risk their lives based on some false bravado that you and others think we should have,
okay.
You're not going to be
Are
the guy going
say
there.
That the day Earl, are you going to say that the day after they invade? Are you going to eat crow?
If they know, because we just had the conversation. Hey, CJ, you just heard the conversation. If they invade China, Taiwan, there are not a whole lot of Americans who are going to say, yay, let's go ahead and send the troops.
The problem is, Earl, he's considered weak. He's seen as weak.
Well, that's what
China.
That's your
China
opinion.
Has said they want to unify Taiwan, and they're going to with this president.
And so how are we going to stop it?
Because it won't happen.
So again, how are we going to stop it?
Well, wait. Let me just step in a minute, CJ. These communiques that were identified by the prior caller, the one in 1971, the one in 1971 at 9, and the one in 82, all talked about China basically solving the issue of sovereignty with Taiwan, but doing it in a peaceful way. There was a recognition all through all of that time period that it was expected that Taiwan and China would unify, but that it would be done on some basis other than militarily. And so are you against the unification of Taiwan and China? Because that was an expected outcome. And apparently, you know, what we're saying now is that we don't want it. And what those communiques said was we don't want it to be accomplished militarily. And Xi is not necessarily saying that he wants to accomplish it militarily. He's saying in his speeches that he expects to achieve unification by the middle of this next century.
Well, you know, I heard you the way you talked about Russia on the border, that the sanctions were meant to deter, and then the president comes out and says,
"Well, no, I never talked about the sanctions being meant to deter. I never had that conversation."
Did.
Oh, well, I thought you said I did.
Didn't he, Sandy? The president did, didn't he, Sandy?
What's your point, man? What's your point?
The point is, this president's weak.
I know you keep saying that. You keep saying that.
President, and we got two more years of this nightmare because this president is proven weak. He's seen weak around the world. And his number one issue is global warming with China. And what a mistake it is, because Xi looks him in the eye. He's the leader of a communist country. Just the way Putin played him like a song, this Xi is going to play him like a song right into war.
All right, CJ, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, just that thought, CJ is not alone. I hear it from other conservatives. Which means nothing.
Well, here's the question, and I think we just all ought to be evaluating, how should America be behaving in the world? And is it America's obligation to flex its muscle throughout the world to achieve the outcomes within countries? For instance, talking about China being a communist regime and suggesting somehow that painted them into a position where we had to be hostile to them. The Chinese do have a different government than we have. They have 1.3 billion people. They have a very rapidly growing economy. They have a much more rapidly growing middle class than we do. So I'm not sure that we're entitled to make a value judgment that should in turn cause us to spend $850 billion of our treasure to be in a position to flex their muscle throughout the world.
Don't they have a right to whichever government they choose?
Yes.
You just grow weary of that mentality, that way of thinking. They've got to be like us. They've got to be democratic. We can't control the world. We have no right to do that. Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, we talked about this a while back, and it's the shortage of diesel fuel. And I was talking, when I was in Brooklyn, I was talking with a guy who was who was an Uber driver who owned had his own truck. And he was telling me how he could not afford to drive. He drove coast to coast. So he had to put his truck up and drive Uber because the cost of diesel fuel prohibited him from doing that. And now the shortage of diesel fuel, Sandy, has continued. So when we're talking about all these other things that are going on, the shortage of diesel fuel is not going to change overnight. You know, it's something that's going to take a while. You know better than most that that's going to retard moving around products. Man, this is not going away anytime soon.
Well, you know, like I said all along, everything's so complicated. But the amount of diesel fuel that they have is a function of decisions made at refineries and how they frack the oil and how they divide it up into its various component parts, one of which is jet fuel, one is gasoline, and diesel fuel. And it has to do with the relative value of the fuels at each end of the frack. And so these are decisions that are being made by the oil industry in terms of how they refine and what volumes they refine. And so it must have to do with the various commodity prices in the various markets created that are buying the fuels in these various fracking categories, diesel, airline, gasoline,
so,
et cetera.
So based on what you're saying, Sandy, they're certainly going to, you know, ration it out to those three different areas and wherever they can make the most money, that's how the decision is going to be determined?
Yeah. I mean, that's the marketplace. That's the way, you know, when someone owns a bunch of oil and they decide how they want to break it up into pieces to sell it with the value added of refining, they'll make a decision as to what processes they use for refining. And I don't think we should dictate anything other than that. It's interesting that it's diesel fuel that's become in short supply. It could also be that the demand for diesel fuel has gone up for reasons. I'm not an expert in the oil commodity business, but you know the escalation of price of diesel would have to relate to the relationship.
A shortage of it, wouldn't it be?
It's supply and it's demand, and. And there are a shortage of truckers. I know people driving trucks, and there's been a breakdown in the number of independent truckers. Your friend must be an independent trucker, owns his own truck. And so the price he's able to charge for his trucking service isn't apparently commensurate with the costs he's experiencing with his fuel.
Well, he was telling me he drives from New York to California. And so just now that, you know, he just cannot, his bottom line, prohibits him from doing that. But Sandy, that then goes again to the supply part of all of this again.
There's supply. I don't know. It could be the shale oil is not as refinable into the diesel. I'm not an expert in the oil refining business, but I do know that the limits we have on gasoline and diesel fuel and all the rest of it are currently dictated by the amount of refining capacity we have in the country. If we were producing more oil, producing more oil out of the ground, we would have to create more refining capacity than we have to deal with it.
So, Sandy, what I'm trying to tie this all into is the part of it, the cost of food, the cost of all the other things that have gone through the roof, they're going to keep going up then. Because if the people who move those products find it cost prohibitive for them to move the products, the prices of the products are going to keep going up. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah. I mean, shortages, like I said, I do think that the current inflation we have is highly driven by shortage. And so long as the public views it that way, then maybe the inflation won't be so long-lived, because when the shortages release and the prices drop as the result of that, the people's sense of inflation will disappear.
So let me say this. So I deep fry turkeys, right? And I've always bought the big carton of it that would normally cost about $35. As I went
Carton,
to
this is the,
peanut
this
oil,
is the oil that you,
yeah, the peanut
yeah,
oil,
yeah.
And so I went to look at the price of it at Walmart last night. It's $59.
Holy
so
cow.
Something that I was normally paying not too long ago, $30 to $35, is now $59. I mean, it's almost doubled in price, Sandy. That's just for oil. They're saying that the price of the turkey, of a turkey, has jumped 30%. So, I mean, those are just things that we don't deal with every day. So, yeah, these prices and the inflation is really real, Sandy, and, you know, when you're talking about, and these are things that you don't deal with every day, excuse me, but even I had to stop and say, wow, wait a minute. You know, so when people get ready to go buy their turkeys, in many instances, it's going to be a major issue for them to deal with just for that. And so I don't even want to think about, you know, Christmas gifts and those kind of things. Got to go to a break. Hold the thought, Cindy. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, the Republicans found out the hard way. They thought that the Roe versus Wade was forgotten. And they thought it was far enough in the rearview mirror that people were going to be focused on the economy and how much things cost and how much all of those things were impacting and affecting their lives. And true enough, based on what I'm just talking about, Sandy, about the peanut oil, and I'm just using that as one example, and all these other things, surely people are concerned about inflation, Sandy, and you know, and the economy. There's no question whatsoever that people are concerned about that. But did the Republicans overplay their hands by thinking that the people were going to forget the move that they made on Roe versus Wade?
Well, you know, karma comes in waves, and sometimes it takes a long time to, but, you know, this is definitely a karmic response. You know, the Roe decision reversal was something that the Republicans tied their wagon to the star of anti-abortionism and made it a litmus test, and became their trademark. And to the extent that either party was to be identified with the elimination of the access by women to making choices, medical choices about motherhood, it was the Republicans who were standing in the way. You know, when you look at what government does, you can connect government to inflation, but you can't. It's not a direct line, and there's lots of other factors like the pandemic and shortage and all these things you can look at. But government is the only thing that is going to stand in the way of a woman making her choice about medical choices about motherhood. And so, you know, I think that the Republicans are just, they miscalculated, and I don't think they ever thought they would get their way and get the vote that they got at the Supreme Court to get the decision they had. But now it's karma. Now it's time for karma. And the karmic response can be seen, you know, in the outcome of this election, I think.
You know, Sandy, it became the albatross. After all of those things that they said, and you know, the pro-life people, and certainly there was almost half of the nation who agree with pro-life. They never thought.
Well, you know, that's the deal. The party, the Republican Party, decided to make pro-life its litmus. But the polling that was done on that issue always suggested that between 60 and 70% of America was actually favored the other position of a woman having choices.
So and you, do you think, Sandy? Well, clearly they knew that, right? I mean, they knew the numbers.
Yeah, they knew the numbers. That's why I think they never really expected. They liked the fight because the fight had no downside. They could get all these people. They could create a litmus. They could make it a rigid test with respect to conservatism. They could marry economic conservatism to social conservatism. It was a beautiful political ploy, and it was working so long as it remained a ploy and not a reality. The danger for them was dog catches car, and the dog caught the car, and the ploy became a reality, and now they're having to live with the political reality, which is a backlash.
You know, Sandy, so we talk about the Democrats and they need to make these pivots. What do the Republican, what the Republican Party as it now stands, and Donald Trump, who's going to make his great announcement on tomorrow, it's fractured. Excuse me. It's fractured, and clearly they're going to have to make this decision on where they're going next. And so what do you see in the near future, Sandy, for the Republican Party that is clearly licking its wounds and eating its own right now? With whether or not that portion of the party that is, you know, the MAGA Republicans right now are at odds with the more conservative, you know.
Well, I think both parties have this problem in that they failed to reach out and actually access a broad swath of America that breaks down the polarity and actually is able to accomplish things. And so, you know, I think the Democrats have a far greater potential for it because the Republicans have made their bed in a way that is very rear guard. It's not futuristic at all. It's tribalism. It's dog whistle racism. It's, you know, the things that they've run on. At least. And I'm not saying that this is what Republicans personally stand for, but it's the way the party has presented itself, and it's the way that they have decided to partition America in the manner of pursuing votes. And, you know, a party that is currently has a broad strategy of voter suppression is clearly on the wrong path, right? I mean, if you're against getting lots of people coming out to vote, then you must think that you don't have a majority of the public in your favor. And so I think the Republicans have to step back and start appealing to a much broader array of issues than they currently do. And they have to appeal to a broader array of people. And they would have to start embracing the same kind of things that I think Democrats have to, which is broad socioeconomic interests of the American public.
So let me ask you, Sandy, because after this last election, I didn't hear Republicans whining and crying and gnashing of teeth about the election was stolen. Is it safe to say that that's something they're going to bury in the future? Because there were a whole lot of conversations before the election that Republicans weren't going to be accepting the outcomes. We didn't hear that. Does that mean in your assessment that maybe by now they're going to bury that?
Well, maybe that argument's gone. I think Carrie Lake continues to, I think yeah. Her election isn't yet finalized. And I think she has suggested that she might not buy the outcome if she loses. Of course, if Trump runs again, he's going to announce tomorrow if he actually gets, and he'll probably refuse to believe he's not getting the nomination vote because it's rigged or, you know, so I'm not sure that this argument is gone, but I think it has gone into disrepute. Because I think that the outcome of this election did cast those arguments. Some of this outcome can be attributed to the abortion issue, and some of it can definitely be, I think, attributed to the disrepute of this general sort of radical view of election election fraud.
Well, you know, again, I haven't seen the hue and outcry that I was expecting to hear, and the threats that we heard prior to the elections, and the fact that, Sandy, they had probably more election monitors than we've ever had anywhere in the history, and you didn't hear a lot of it was rigged, right?
Well, my experience is that everyone I've ever talked to who has done poll watching, who has gotten involved in the election process, comes away absolutely awestruck at the number of steps and audits that go on in the process, and the complexity that it would take to ever commit a voting fraud, a broad voting fraud, that it's just such a carefully run process that I suspect the more poll watchers there are, the more there comes a belief that, you know what, there isn't fraud in this process, because it would be damn near impossible.
You know, Sandy, I was thinking over the last several weeks, as Joe Biden is going to be turning 80 shortly, and I got to thinking about, you know, I like Joe Biden. I think that what he's done as a president the last couple years has been kind of miraculous, right? I mean, he was able to move some things that none of us ever, when I remember when he first started talking about Build Back Better, and I remember myself saying, hey, what is he talking about, right? Joe Biden, I didn't support Joe Biden, and so that Build Back Better thing was fool's gold. But if you really look at what Joe Biden's been able to get accomplished, probably more, Sandy, than most of us would have ever imagined that he could have gotten done, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only problem Joe Biden has is the impression that he leaves physically, because politically, he's accomplished quite a great deal, and it looks like he's going to have the majority of the Senate. He's going to continue to be able to appoint judges and get appointments approved, so that he actually, you know, if you simply look at it from kind of a historian
accomplishments
standpoint,
accomplishments have been,
yeah, he's had
monumental.
He's had material accomplishments, and he's done much better in the midterms than any sitting president for a very long time.
So, but here's the other part of it. He's going to be 80.
I think most of us who like him do believe that he probably shouldn't run for office again.
So the question then becomes, Sandy, what I've been thinking about is, who then would be next for the Democrats? And you say Buttigieg.
I just notice on social media that Buttigieg is quite active, and there's lots of Buttigieg stuff going on. And I think, and he is a very impressive guy in terms of his ability to deal with
issues. He's a brilliant guy, Sandy. I believe he's young enough, but I don't know if the country is ready, you know, to have a gay
president.
It's not ready for a female president, right? So
I mean, it would be ironic in the world of chauvinism for a gay male president to be elected before a female president gets elected. But I suspect, if you look in the crystal ball as to who might get the nomination if Joe Biden doesn't run next time, It's kind of hard to see a woman. As you were saying during the break, I guess I mentioned Gretchen Whitmer, but she isn't really a powerful national figure.
No. I've listened to Gretchen Whitmer. I've seen her. Over the last several years, she's not well known. It just goes to show, though, Sandy, that, you know, you would think, because I was reading something the other day where Elizabeth Warren is thinking about running again, but clearly she's not. Bernie Sanders is not, and so if it's not Joe Biden, we know Kamala Harris, you know, is probably will run, but I don't think there's any way possible that she could get the nomination.
Yeah, I think she was far more popular when fewer people knew much about her. And I think that the image that she gives, and granted, a vice president doesn't get in a position to put on much in the way of a policy discussion, but the image she portrays is, I don't think, very presidential.
So let me ask you, Sandy, as we look at all of this, the politics Democrat, Republican, Senate, Congress, you know, young, are we going to see finally a transformation, Sandy, and a move more to younger political leadership in the coming year, a couple of years? Do we see a transformation? I mean, Chuck Schumer, the same people are still there. And nothing will ever change if we don't change those people. Got to go to a break. Hold the thought, Sandy. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, let's talk about some local politics and on the state level. Because I was listening to how can I forget, is it Robin Voss last Friday. And he was actually talking about, Sandy, kind of breaking bread with Governor Evers, maybe finding some common ground with the governor. And so I was just wondering, why do you think now that Robin Voss, who's basically been doing everything within his power not to want to have or create any kind of partnership with the governor. Now all of a sudden, has he seen things through a different prism, you think, because he saw that he just about lost his seat?
I mean, he might see the world differently after he got struck by, I mean, once again, the word karma, but, you know, he was a pretty staunch supporter of Trump and the whole thing. And when the world, Trump, that whole thing turned on him in a pretty significant way. So maybe he's decided that this stridently partisan politics isn't necessarily the way to go.
You know, and that's kind of what I was hearing from him, Sandy, because as you know, you and I know, and maybe some in the audience, Donald Trump tried to have him jettisoned. He wanted to see him gone, and he ran a novice against him. And maybe he had a come to Jesus moment, and that can't be anything but good for our state and hopefully for our city. If at some point on the state level we can begin to see some things happen that need to happen, not just for the city of Milwaukee, but cities across the state.
Well, I suspect that $5 billion surplus that's sitting there, that's probably a matter of interest to Robin Voss in terms of wanting to have some input into how that gets utilized. And, you know, the supermajority that they'd hope for, you know, they. I think they have a need to work with the Democratic government.
You know, the other part of it is Tony Evers has always been the kind of guy who is easy to work with, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that I know about the governor is that he's not, I'm a Democrat, you're a Republican, we can't have any dialogue. He's really a guy, Sandy, who, if you look at his record, he's done some good things on the state level in spite of the gridlock that Republicans have thrown up against him. And I think that what we'll see, Sandy, in the future, correct me if I'm wrong, is the ability to really kind of do some good things in our state. Our state is in a position, unlike many other states, but this one is in a position with that kind of a surplus, Sandy, that, you know, the state can move forward in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, during the campaign season, you know, the state isn't broken. The state's really in good shape. Evers has done a good job. One of the reasons he did win re-election is they didn't have any issues to paint him with. You know, there weren't a lot of let's blame Evers for this or that mistake, or this problem in Wisconsin can be laid at the foot of Tony Evers. They had to kind of stretch. They had to figure out that he hadn't fired a DA in Milwaukee. That was one of their reasons. Or that inflation was a problem. Well, that's not the governor's fault. And I think that's why he's reelected, because he basically has done a good job. Wisconsin's in a good place.
You know, you for those who don't know, you were the counsel for under Governor...
Yeah, a long time ago. People won't, if I tell you who, they won't know who that is. Yeah, Patrick Lucey, who was the governor for 6.5 years in the 70s.
So I'm old enough to remember Patrick Lucey. And so if you, Sandy, if you looked at it from the perspective of you and the state at that point in time and where things are and the way things were at that point in time, contrast them with where we are today as a state, what would your thoughts be about the strength of our state now as opposed to then?
Well, you know, some things have moved in a negative direction. The isolation and the racial segregation in Milwaukee has only gotten worse, not better. The economic condition within the city has worsened with all the layoffs and jobs. I mean, the layoffs began in that period, but they certainly accelerated. And by the end of the 80s, it was a different place than it was during the 70s. There was a great deal less polarization. The state was purple throughout. You know, it was reddish or bluish depending on the election year.
Financially, wasn't it clearly stronger then? We had the industries.
Yeah, we had more manufacturing jobs, but the paper industry was very strong. So there were a lot of things that were strong about the state then that are different and now. There are some parts of the state that are more vulnerable now, but the state is currently in quite a good place. I mean, we've always been sort of slow and steady wins the race. And, you know, we've not had dramatic, even in the face of all those lost manufacturing jobs. The unfortunate part of that is that the Milwaukee community is the lone community that has suffered in the long term as the result of those job losses. Rural Wisconsin is suffering now because of the paper mill, the loss of paper jobs, and so, you know, the country's the Wisconsin's much like the country. Our middle class is more fragile today than it used to be.
So what about the population of the state? Have we lost population?
No, I think our population is bigger today than it was in the 70s, but not by a lot. You know, we're a very slow-growing state and maybe somewhat static.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
It's a jungle inside, yeah. Myself again till the